Tonight, I'm going to talk about anger. And it's a important topic in many ways. Anger, of course, is shamed in many contexts. The Puritans, of course, shamed anger and sexuality. Those were the two worst things you could have, according to the Puritans. And meanwhile, you know, you could be racked with fear and still be a very good Puritan. Anger is also shamed. At least the more impulsive expressions of anger are shamed in a corporate environment. Ironically, corporate America in many ways valorizes, you know, passive aggressive behavior and more subtle, you know, manifestations of anger. And even in New Age circles, you know, I've certainly heard these judgments of, you know, oh, you're getting angry, you're not enlightened enough, you know, like this kind of thing. And it would be easy, certainly, to go through sacred writings, both East and West, and find all kinds of statements condemning anger. And I think the way I would say it is, anger gets a bad rap for its unskillful manifestations. You know, in other words, if I feel angry and I start trashing other people or being abusive or expressing the anger in that kind of way, obviously there's something quite irresponsible about that. But that's different from the feeling of anger itself and just holding that feeling. Anger is a profound form of vulnerability. And there's something very powerful about being in touch with this energy. So I'm going to read a piece by David White. This is actually, it's on the quote sheet, which I will share later. But right now I'll just project this so that you can see as I'm reading. Anger is the deepest form of compassion. For another, for the world, for the self, for a life, for the body, for a family, and for all our ideals, all vulnerable and all possibly about to be hurt. Stripped of physical imprisonment and violent reactions, anger is the purest form of care. The internal living flame of anger always illuminates what we belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we are willing to hazard ourselves for. What we usually call anger is only what is left of its essence when we are overwhelmed by its accompanying vulnerability, when it reaches the lost surface of our mind or body's incapacity to hold it, when it touches the limits of our understanding. What we name anger is actually only the incoherent physical incapacity to sustain this deep form of care in our outer life. The unwillingness to be large enough and generous enough to hold what we love helplessly in our bodies and our minds with the clarity and breath of our whole being. What we have named as anger on the surface is the violent outer response to our inner powerlessness, a powerlessness connected to such a profound sense of rawness and care that it can find no proper outer body or identity or voice or way of life to hold it. What we call anger is often simply the unwillingness to live in the full measure of our fears of not knowing, or in the face of simply being alive and loving those with whom we live. Our anger breaks to the surface most often through our feeling that there is something profoundly wrong with this powerlessness and vulnerability. Anger too often finds its voice strangely through our incoherence and through our inability to speak. But anger in its pure state is a measure of the way we are implicated by the world and made vulnerable. Anger truly felt at its center is the essential living flame of being alive and fully here. It is a quality to be followed to its source, to be prized, to be tended, and an invitation to finding a way to bring that source more fully into the world through making the mind clearer and more generous, the heart more compassionate, and the body larger and strong enough to hold it. What we call anger on the surface serves only serves to define its true underlying quality by being a completely but absolutely mirror opposite to its true internal essence. So there's a tremendous amount going on in that quote. Anger is an incredible form of vulnerability. It's very raw. And in many ways, it's connected to sexuality. A person who refuses to experience their anger is also refusing to feeling deeper levels of sexual passion. You know, and that often produces good little boys and good little girls, that sort of thing. And so it presents challenges to us. You know, one challenge is along the lines of impulse control and, you know, not exploding, not blowing out anger irresponsibly, you know, toward others. A whole other set of challenges has to do with feeling it, with dropping into it. I was really struck in reading the David White words this week and thinking about our powerlessness. You know, we don't like being powerless. You know, we fight tooth and nail against it. It's a direct challenge to many second chakra level fears. And often the response is, you know, wanting control and being control and all the uptight ways we try and control life and not acknowledge the tremendous powerlessness. And of course, the fact that we are in some ways fundamentally powerlessness does not contradict at all that we're also very powerful. You know, it's almost the paradox that we're both far more powerful and far more powerless than we'd like to admit, you know. I have a friend who likes to say that the most important question in life is simply, how big is your container? How big is your capacity to hold things? You know, and anger is an emotion that takes tremendous capacity. And the way we grow our capacity is to go to our edge and to live at our edge each day. You know, it's only by slowly leaning into what is initially intolerable that over time it becomes more tolerable and we're able to hold more. You know, for some people, the way into anger is simply the question, what is the sadness underneath the anger? And the sadness is often a path to that vulnerability. Ultimately, below even that sadness is just the pure vulnerability itself, the raw caring. You might say that's the root of anger, this incredibly vital, raw place of caring. And the question is, you know, can we not only journey to that place, can we rest there? Can we actually walk into the world at rest in that place of caring? That is, in some ways, the profound question of anger. I'll say that anger, in many ways, is a very hot emotion. I'll use that metaphor of heat. And often what cools it is listening and silence that has a very cool quality. You know, when somebody that you care about is angry at you, in a way they're showing you a profound face of vulnerability. You know, and the trouble is that often what happens is one person gets angry and then the other person gets defensive and then, you know, and essentially getting defensive, you know, it is operationally a statement, I'm not willing to see the profound place of vulnerability you're trying to show me. you know. And it's a very hard thing to do, but can we remain calm and undefended in the face of somebody else's anger? I've had experiences a lot, especially over the past couple of years. I'm teaching at a school where a lot of the students have been through a great deal of trauma, and a lot of them get angry often. And every once in a while, a kid just starts screaming bloody murder at me, you know. And I found multiple times that the kid starts getting angry, and I just remain calm, and I say, tell me more. Tell me more about that. And just allow that energy to keep moving. And eventually they wind up sharing these incredibly vulnerable things about themselves. And sometimes it happens that they share something vulnerable and then they see my reaction and how much I'm moved by that. And that just shifts the whole interaction. Suddenly they feel seen, you know. Of course, it's easier to do this with a 15-year-old than with an adult, you know, an eye-to-eye adult. But there is something very profound that's being shared when anyone gets angry. And along those lines, I would say, I think this becomes, you know, the whole question of how do we listen to anger and how do we receive other people's anger becomes particularly important across lines of race. You know, there's been ways that the scariest thing for white people is black anger, you know, and this not wanting to hear, not even wanting to deal with black anger, you know. And by contrast, you know, it's funny, at one point I was a faculty advisor for a group of Asian American students, and one thing that the Asian American students said that it absolutely shocked me. They said, you know, when an Asian person gets angry, it's kind of funny. And it really shocked me. But I think there is something profound about white America being terrified of black anger, but not taking seriously Asian American anger, you know? And both of those are profound dehumanizing, you know, to say either your anger is so scary that I'm gonna walk away and I can't even see it, or your anger is something that I'm gonna trivialize and not take seriously. I mean, either one of those is so profoundly dehumanizing. And I think the whole question of how do we listen to anger, it's an incredibly important question in all equity work right now, you know. We live in a time of all kinds of tensions, you know. I mean, certainly the shelter in place is everyone on edge, you know. How do we listen to anger? And can we be gracious and generous receivers of other people's anger? So with that, I'll share the quote sheet. The top of the quote sheet is the long quote from David White. And incidentally, I have a link to the book there, Consolations. It's a truly astonishing book. I highly recommend that book. But then some quotes on the next page. The great reformer Martin Luther said, "When I am angry, I can pray well and preach well." The great 19th century preacher Henry Beecher Ward said, "Never forget what a man says to you when he is angry." You know? Carl Jung said, "A man who has not passed through the inferno of his passions has never overcome them." That great sage Maya Angelou said, "Bitterness is like cancer. It eats upon the host. But anger is like fire. It burns all clean." Gloria Steinem said, "Anger is energizing. Anger is the opposite of anger is depression, which is anger turned inward." Rachel Naomi Remen said quite simply, "There are only two kinds of people in the world, those who are alive and those who are afraid." Wow. Eckhart Tolle reminds us where there is anger, there is always pain underneath. Jochen Panla Rinpoche says, "The word Buddha simply means awake or awakened. It does not refer to any particular historical person or philosophy of religion. It refers to your own mind. You know you have a mind, but what's it like? It's awake. I don't just mean not asleep. I mean your mind is really awake beyond your imagining." And there's something about that awake quality of the mind, truly awake, that edge of vitality. Anger allows us to go there. Suzanne Dillman says, "There's a quiet statement of worth within such anger. Anger that arises to protect is rooted in the notion I am worthy of having my needs met, my rights respected, my desires deemed legitimate. Recognizing within that the fury of your anger is a quiet statement of your needs that and worth can be liberating." Robin Kanji says, "Anger is the younger sister of care. This is anger's hidden wisdom. When we shine a light on our anger, we also illuminate our care. This has much to teach us about who we are, about what we value, and how we can live more purposefully. Don't fear your anger. Listen to it. Honor it. Follow its light. It has so much to show you." And Melvin McLeod says, "We have the same power to say no that the Buddhas do. Traditionally, it is said that the enlightened energy of anger is the wisdom of clarity. It is sharp, accurate, and penetrating insight. It sees what is wholesome and unwholesome, what is just and unjust, what is enlightenment and what is ignorance. Seeing clearly, we lay the foundation for action."